Hi, this is Bill Hoppe, Buffalo Sabres beat reporter, and I'm joined by Nick Sabato, Buffalo Bills beat reporter and Niagara Gazette sports editor. And welcome to episode 28 of Buffalo Press Box. 28 of these, Nick. Hard to believe, huh? So here we are. It's April. The Sabres have been eliminated from the playoffs. The Buffalo Bills have the upcoming NFL draft. It's still a busy time. O.J. Simpson has passed away. We have a lot to discuss. Nick, let's start with the Bills and the draft. There's a lot of talk about the Bills getting a receiver, especially after, I mean, there was before they traded Stephon Diggs, and that's only intensified over the last week or so. So should the Bills trade up for a receiver? What are your thoughts?
I don't think that they should trade up unless it's, you know, a deal like the last couple of years, you know, where you're trading up a couple spots, you're not giving up a whole lot. If we're talking, you know, making a big jump, a jump into the top 10, I can't see how that makes sense to people. I mean, just the entire, because if you're going to hop into the top 10 from 28, you're going to have to give up a second first round pick. Mm-hmm. And I've never understood the idea of let's trade two picks, you know, two guys, and they probably have to throw in a second in there as well. So we're talking, you're going to trade three guys who should hypothetically start for your team for one guy. It just doesn't, I mean, the math doesn't make sense there. And when you look at it over time, you know, over the last 30 years, you know, 18 times a team has traded multiple first round picks to jump up in the draft. Four of those guys have played in the Super Bowl. Three have won. That's it. 10 of them are quarterbacks.
Huh.
I mean, even over the last 10 years, there's been 10 of those instances, and 7 out of the 10 have been quarterbacks. So clearly, teams, if they're going to do that, the position they value predominantly and overwhelmingly is quarterback. Mm-hmm. They obviously don't need a quarterback. So, I mean, why mortgage the future for one guy, especially when you aren't sure if he's going to be the guy you need him to be?
Now, it was 10 years ago the Bills traded up for Sammy Watkins, right?
Right, and how'd that work out?
That did not work out. he had a very good rookie year, but did not work out.
I mean, maybe if there's more around him and circumstances are different, you know, that whole deal would have been different. But, I mean, didn't even get close to working out. And, I mean, out of the 18, I think three have been receivers. I mean, one was Julio Jones. I mean, Julio Jones is, you know, had a Hall of Fame career. But it didn't really help Atlanta win a Super Bowl. I mean, they got to one, but he was there 10 years. They went to the playoffs four times. Mm-hmm. The other one, can you name the third? Sammy Watkins.
Can I name the other one?
Sammy Watkins, Julio Jones, third receiver. He won a Super Bowl. J.J. Stokes.
J.J. Stokes.
And I don't know if long term. Yeah, the 49ers won a Super Bowl his rookie year, but I don't know if that.
Are you
that,
sure?
Yeah.
Wasn't that 95?
94.
UCLA.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd be hard pressed to get anybody to believe that that worked out for San Francisco.
There's a lot of hype with J.J. Stokes. My Willie Gault guess was kind of my dumb guess to throw things off.
Well, Willie Gault played more than 30 years ago. He played for the 85 Bears.
He won the Super Bowl with the Bears.
Yeah.
But
when you were a young man in your 30s.
Please. When the Bears won the Super Bowl, I was 5. Yeah. I was in kindergarten. So there. And I don't think you were born yet, were you?
No, I wasn't even a thought.
Go ahead. You
look at the whole deal. Like, I'm a firm believer the Bills should build around Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. You look at their 6 games against Kansas City, and not one time have they decided to go in and say, our quarterback is just as good as yours. We're going to outscore you. I mean, even the 13 seconds game, it was, the Bills had, what, 20, 21 points with 2 minutes left?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, They ended up with 36, but that was not a shootout. The last 2 minutes were. It doesn't make sense. And the Bills need bodies. They need young, cheap bodies. I mean, yes, they cleared away some cap space for next year, but that cap, you know, that adds up quickly still. You've got Greg Rousseau coming up, end of his rookie deal coming up. But I would expect that they're gonna exercise his fifth option real soon. You know, Terrell Bernard, if he continues the way he played last year, you're gonna eventually probably want to pay him. All that stuff adds up. I mean, Dalton Kincaid at some point, if he continues the way he has, you're gonna want to extend him. You just can't afford to trade away those assets, you know, unless you really need them, unless you're looking for a guy like a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes. For a receiver, I mean, I think you can, yes, the Bills need receivers, but I think they can get them in other parts of the draft.
Traditionally, I mean, this is going back different regimes. I mean, the Bills haven't really taken a lot of wide receivers in the first round, have they?
Not over the last 40 some years. I think the list
Eric
is
Moulds,
what, like,
obviously, and
Eric Moulds, Sammy Watkins. There's one more, I think.
I think Don Beebe was their first pick. That wasn't
he was a number
first
two.
Round, though.
No, he was a number two.
Right, but I mean, he wasn't there. It wasn't a first rounder, but he was maybe their first pick.
Yeah. So I mean,
but,
anyway. they haven't put a high premium on the position, and you know what? Neither have a lot of teams. I mean, look at the Packers. The Packers were killed for how long for not giving Aaron Rodgers another receiver. But they drafted 37 receivers from 94 to 2022, Rodgers last year. One of them was a first-round pick. But you look at those the guys that they took. I mean, Davante Adams, second round. Jordy Nelson, second round. Greg Jennings, second round. Antonio Freeman, third round. I mean, Christian Watson looks pretty good right now. He's a second-round pick. And right now, I think the stable of receivers the Packers have, a lot of teams would be jealous for that. At the cost and production combined. And even the Patriots. I mean, how many number one clear cut receivers, not tight ends, receivers, did the New England have while they were with, well, Brady was there? The one is Randy Moss, and he didn't win a Super Bowl with Randy Moss.
Right. I mean, Deion Branch. I mean, he was pretty good, but not like.
No, I mean, Julian Edelman was a good player for them, but not, you know, in that stratosphere. So, I mean, it can be done in different ways, and you don't have to go with the, you know, the Colts, you know, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne route. And even, let's be honest, they tried a third time with Anthony Gonzalez. That didn't work out. I mean, you had the Rams with the greatest show on turf, but that was short-lived. So, I mean, there's just other places to get those guys. And I don't think that they need to jump at it to get there. Although, you know, Brandon Bean has kind of shown that he's an aggressive guy. And I'm going to guess that he has a plan after trading Stephon Diggs. I don't think you make that move without one. And he's more likely to trade up than trade down.
Who was the wide receiver the Packers took in the first round?
Javon Walker.
Oh, okay.
You're going to kick yourself for the third receiver the Bills have taken in the first round since over the last 40 years. It's an obvious one.
First round. What year?
Well, that'll tip you off.
I know.
So 04. 04.
Oh, Lee Evans.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So, Lee, I mean,
former Jaguar and Raven, Lee Evans.
The Bills, and when the year the Bills took BB, it was a third round pick. And their next pick was also a receiver. Never played for the Bills. You know who it was?
In 89?
Yep.
It's not Bernard Ford.
No. He was the year before, and he was a third round pick.
80. I'm sure I know it. Who was it?
John Colasar.
All right, I know the name. Yes,
they actually three of their four first picks never actually played for the Bills.
In 89?
Yeah, or at all. That was not a great draft.
Well, I mean, that was the exception to the rule back then, because if you go through all their drafts from whatever 85 to even into the late 90s, they were, I mean, they right? all I mean, paid off.
Well, 88 wasn't very good either. Well, they got, obviously they got Thurman, and that was great. And then Jeff Wright and Carlton Bailey, but
not bad.
89, seventh round pick, probably the most successful athlete of all of their picks that year. You know who it was?
Was it one of the doctors?
Brian, well, John Doctor was.
Oh, Brian Jordan.
Brian Jordan.
That's right.
Yeah.
Played many games in Buffalo for the Louisville Redbirds, though.
Yes. And then with the Braves, played for the Braves.
Mm-hmm. Some major league teams. But yeah, I mean, he played for the Falcons for at least, what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Pretty crazy, yeah. That defensive backfield with Deion Sanders and Tim McHire, maybe. And
yeah, he was there.
So, all right, Nick. So, O.J. Simpson has passed away from cancer. You wrote a column on, you know, I guess how people view his football career now. People have been weighing on this. Like, how do you view just how, you know, people are just remembering, you know, O.J. Simpson, the person, and O.J. Simpson, the football player, and, you know, I'll let you take it from there.
Well, I mean, I don't think that you can tell any story about O.J. without including his football career. It's his football career and his stardom because of his football career is the big reason that his entire trial just gripped the country. Without his fame, and it's callous to say it, it would have just been a murder trial. And some people would have followed it, some people wouldn't have. But it certainly would have been national news. It certainly wouldn't have been played, you know, the trial certainly wouldn't have been played on television if O.J. Simpson wasn't a star. I think that you can't ignore O.J.'s career as a football player, but I think when you discuss him and you discuss his football career, you can't do it without mentioning what he did after, you know, almost certainly murdering Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. I think we should be comfortable enough to say that he did it. I don't think there's any question about that. But we live in a world that we want to make things so black and white, left and right, that we lose track of the idea that nothing really is that. Everything has shades of gray. And I think this is one of them. I mean, O.J., people now, you know, a lot of people now just recognize him as a killer or a criminal. And I think now that he's dead and the people who grew up watching him start to age, I think eventually his football legacy will just go away. I mean, you look at it, he's still in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, still on the Bills Wall of Fame, made the NFL 100 team. Now, I think when you look at it from that standpoint, the Bills did not release a statement yesterday. And I don't think, right. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think anybody else should either. Because you can't have it both ways in that regard. You can't want him to go away and then expect his former team to say something. I don't think they needed to. I mean, the man hasn't played in almost 50 years. So, but, you know, the Bills, once the new stadium opens, there will be no more Wall of Fame. There's going to be some Legends Atrium, and they might be able to get away with no reference of him. I mean, the next time the NFL does an anniversary team, there's a good chance he's not on it, even if he deserves to be. Because over time, you know, you can just get away with not having him there. I think he's always going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I would suspect his Heisman Trophy will always be on display at USC. You know, we don't have to say this guy was a great football player while saying he's a good guy. We can still say he was a great football player and a vile human being. I think that's the space where we need to get, because when you look at it, OJ, the the entire deal. O.J. Simpson is a major character in American history. You know, and characters don't have to be good or, you know, doesn't have to be good. But you look at the trial, it changed a whole lot of our culture from a standpoint of how we cover things in media, how the public consumes media and what they want to consume. The racial, you know, race, flaws in the American justice system. You look at it. I mean, if this happened today, is there any question that he would have been convicted with DNA and all that stuff? And at the same time, too, we've gotten to a point in our country where nobody's surprised that a celebrity would do something like this. And that was a big part of it at the time. Like, is this guy who was a star with a $1 million smile, who was doing advertisements and on Monday Night Football and in movies and this and that, and now he's a killer? Like, that was such a huge thing, and it's hard to ignore all of that.
All right, Nick.
How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, I think he was rightly ostracized from his previous life, I guess you could say. Just he was never, on TV again. He never lived that life. I mean, he lived a life of, you know, if he went out, he was gawked at, and he just golfed, and it was a total 180. And I mean, they found out so much about him. I mean, it was crazy. And I mean, you wrote a story with him on his big Thanksgiving Day game. I mean, you talked to him. What was he like?
I mean, yeah, I believe I was one of the last people to interview him, actually.
Wow.
He was, I think, what you would imagine he would be. You go back and you look at it, everything about his life was an attempt to create this character that everyone loved, the star. I mean, I don't know where I saw it, but last night someone showed a clip of his Hall of Fame induction, and he mentioned Nicole Brown and how she came into his life at a difficult time because it was the end of his career and his star was fading. And you know, you look at it when things started going haywire for him. I think he was I don't know if he was charged. I think he pled no contest to domestic violence in 89. I mean, that was at a time where he was kind of fading away. Like, yeah, he was on Monday Night Football in the mid-80s. He was doing some commercials. He was in movies, but like the movie thing never really worked out for him. Like, he never really got past like just Jordan being. Burke. Yeah, like he was just part of the movie. He was never a reason for the movie. And even as a broadcaster, you know, by the time the Bills were going to the Super Bowl and he had moved to NBC, he was just a sideline guy. And not to belittle being a sideline reporter, there's a lot of talented people who do that. But generally, someone of his fame, of his talent as a player, you're either a studio analyst or a color commentator, and he was not. And it's hard to imagine that didn't play a factor in his, you know, what he did to Nicole Brown over time and eventually killing her, and then Ron Goldman. Like, just a man struggling to come to grips with the idea that he was fading away. He was no longer famous. And I mean, there's just all kinds of instances like that with him where, I mean, even Bob Costas has told a story about how OJ and Al Collins tried to call him from the back of the Bronco during the chase. And it wasn't to say I'm innocent. It was to say the media is defaming me. He was worried about, even in that moment, he was worried about his, you know, how people viewed him. And that even, I mean, you know, I spoke to him about 18 months ago, and there was still just kind of a lack of self-awareness. Like, the first, you know, you make small talk at the start, and he brags about how good his golf game is. And there's just no, like, it's so tone deaf because, you know, after he was acquitted, the whole joke with him, he became a punchline where he said he was going to scour the earth for the real killers. And then anytime you saw him, it was on a golf course.
Right.
And, you know, but at the same time, too, you when you talk to him, he's smooth. He's charming. You can understand why people latch on to him. But there's also a hint of, you know, sociopathic tendencies. It's not, it doesn't always feel genuine. And he really, you could tell that he enjoyed talking about himself. This was an opportunity to talk about himself. And, you know, when it came time to end the interview, he was almost disappointed. I mean, I think he kind of, when I said, you know, that's kind of all I got for you, he laughed and was like, okay, bud, like, kind of like, you're going to end things, not me. Like, it was almost a disappointment that he was not going to be able to talk about himself anymore. And that's kind of what his life was the last few years. I mean, desperately trying to cling to, you know, some way of fame. He desperately wanted to be OJ, not Arenthal James Simpson, OJ, the juice. That's who he wanted to be. Like, he spent a lot of his appearances over the years were, you know, him sitting in a sports bar posting videos on Twitter. I mean, that was the only way he could get in front of a camera at that point, and he needed it.
Right.
And the man had almost 900,000 followers when he died. So, I mean, I don't know if he's ever going to go away, because his whole deal was so important in our culture. But, you know, that's the kind of guy he was. He was just, it was all a public image, all of it. And it's surreal to talk to someone like that.
I'm sure it is.
I mean, just no remorse, no. I mean, I guess if he thinks he's innocent, I guess why would he show remorse? But there's no awareness that the majority of the people in this country think he did it.
Mm-hmm.
It was sad, I guess. I think that's the best way to put it. Sad for the people he killed and their families, and sad that, you know, a man that was so well liked, you know, personally by people, just ended up being a terrible human being.
All right, Nick, thank you. Now the Sabres. We got to talk some Sabres.
I don't know if that's gonna light. I don't know if that's gonna to bring up the mood, Bill. 13 years. 13 years without a playoff berth. And
I know.
This one feels a little different, does it not?
Well, I mean, yeah, it does feel a lot different because this was supposed to be the year. This year there were legitimate playoff expectations. And at certain points during this drought, there have been playoff expectations. I mean, you go back to, I mean, the first year, 2011-12, there weren't just playoff expectations. There were Stanley Cup expectations. In 12-13, there were high expectations. And then, of course, they went away for a few years. But I think a lot of people, including myself, believe this could be the year they finally got back. And it's bitterly disappointing. I mean, I still think, but in saying all that, as bad as they've been at times this season, they're not really a bad team. They're basically an average team, a little less than average.
Probably a little less than average since 16 make the playoffs.
But I mean, for the most part, they've been average.
No, their problem has not been that they have these long losing streaks. It's that they can't string wins together.
Right. But I mean, I think when you examine it, and I know people don't want to hear this, but I still think they're on the right path. I still think they're closer than people think. And I believe that, I mean, obviously they have to make changes. I mean, probably some significant changes, but I don't think that this is anything that, you know, needs a total retool or anything like that. I think they're still on that path, and I think if they make the right moves this offseason, they could certainly get in the playoffs next year. I think as much as it stings, as much as you don't want to give them more time, I think if you're patient, this will pay off and they can become that team that everyone expected maybe this year, next year.
Well, what changes do you expect?
The changes I expect are, I mean, there could be changes to the coaching staff. I'm not sure. And I'll say it again. I would not fire Don Granato. Don Granato doesn't deserve to be fired. I mean, yes, they've regressed in some areas this year. You look at them as a team as a whole this year, and in a lot of ways, they don't resemble the team they were last year. But I still think that they've evolved. I still think that they've done some, you know, things better than they did in the past. And given Don Granato's track record the past few years and bringing them from a team at rock bottom into, you know, a team knocking on the door of the playoffs and, you know, sporting one of the league's best offenses and so on, guys ascending to some of the league's, you know, top players, I think he deserves more time. I really do. And, well, for, you know,
I don't know. I think whether he deserves it or not, I don't think that's I don't know if that's the narrative anymore. I think it's there are fans who are ready to commit a full on mutiny with this team, and obviously winning will bring him back like nothing ever happened. But I think if he's back, it's going to make a lot of people upset.
Well, I mean,
and I think when you look at it, like the NHL, we've talked about this. The NHL, I mean, pro sports in general, but the NHL specifically, is just atrocious when it comes to coaches. Atrocious.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Granato. I believe he's coached the sixth most amount of games without a playoff berth in NHL history. Like, that's crazy. But at the same time, that's kind of how things work in the NHL. Is that even the good teams? I mean, how many different coaches has Sidney Crosby had? And they've been good just about his entire career. You know, it's tough. And I think the things that, to me, that need to be reconciled in some way is that what they went into a game 4 points out of a playoff spot six times and lost all six. And in a lot of those instances, they were flat. They didn't. You know, they got hammered, or it was just none of those games were good. And I think that needs to be something that needs to be addressed. And at a certain point, I mean, yeah, a lot of this is about the players. There's no question about that. But the coach also, you know, is responsible for those players and getting them ready to go and making sure that they understand the moment and it's not too big for them. And the Sabres just haven't gotten there. I mean, you look at the game in Detroit. Both games in Detroit over the last month or so have been just dreadful. I mean, the first period deal all season is dreadful. And then you go into Detroit, clean, you know, still in the hunt, and you lay an egg in the first period. And then I think they were lackluster at the back end against the Stars on a night that they were going to get eliminated. That has to be addressed. And I think Terry Pegula needs to take a long, hard look and see if Don Granato is part of that problem. And the other part I think is hard is I don't know that his comments were great. The idea that he didn't want to address missing the playoffs after losing to the Stars. You have to. He kind of left his players to deal with that. And the coach needs to, I mean, it's reality. It sucks for him, but it's reality that they were eliminated and he didn't want to talk about it. And then I think he was a little tone deaf the other day saying that he likes the position they're in. What he means is different than what people will hear, but people hear a certain thing. They see that he's content with being mediocre or less than mediocre. And that's tough. I think that's tough for people to get on board with.
Well, he probably should have just addressed it after the Stars game. And, I mean, he knew he was going to have to address it, and he addressed it Thursday at length. I don't. I mean, I don't think he's. In no way do I think he's content with where the Sabres are. I mean,
no, but that's the message by saying what he did and doing what he did. That's kind of the message.
Well,
that certain people here, I think they need to listen a little closer. But that's not how the public works, right?
Well, they shouldn't interpret those comments as him being content, because he's not. I mean, Don Granato is a very competitive coach, and I mean, you don't see him have, you know, the fire of some of these other coaches, in post game comments or on the bench. But I mean, he's, in my opinion, he's every bit as competitive as them. So I don't think they should interpret his comments as being content. Yeah, and yes, he should have. I mean, you get eliminated from the playoffs. I think you should address it, and he did. But in the immediate aftermath,
it was too late.
Probably should. What's that?
It was just too late. It happened too late.
But I mean, I think one thing we have to remember too is Don Granato has a contract extension that hasn't kicked in yet. So
yeah, I mean that's the kicker.
But the point I want to make is you have to commit to something, and this cycle of hiring and firing for more than a decade or whatever. I mean, that's what got the Sabres into this mess. I mean, you can't just bring guys in for 2 years or a year or whatever, and then, you know, find a new guy. I mean, you can't keep doing that and expect to have any sort of success. And I mean, I think people need to realize that the Sabres, while they had a tough season, the best move is keeping Don Granato. I really do.
I think that if they're going to keep Granato, they need to overhaul his staff.
Well, I mean,
he needs some veteran assistance, I think. Not that I think, like, we need veteran assistance so that, you know, you have, there's, they somehow have more knowledge. No, I think it's because you went with a bunch of guys that didn't have a great experience, specifically Matt Ellis. Matt Ellis was kind of you're working at the hockey academy and we need an assistant right now, so we're going to take you. I mean,
I don't agree with that. Matt
Ellis. I think that's exactly how it was, because he that's what he was doing. They could have gone they could have brought in Michael Pecker or somebody like that, and they went with Matt Ellis because he was kind of there. I mean, when you look at it top to bottom, whether it's true or not, and it probably isn't true, you look at hiring Kevin Adams, you look at promoting Don Granato, you look at getting a bunch of his assistants, for weeks of, these guys are here and they're cheap, let's go with them. I think that's what a lot of people saw at the time too.
Well, I don't think, I honestly don't think it was that.
Well, I think I there is some, there was, well, Don Granato had to do it because Ralph Krueger got fired. But like the Adams deal, I'm sure Terry Pegula saw something nobody else did. But when you look at it from afar and you're not in those conversations, not in those rooms, it looks like he was just kind of there and he's filling a role. But they're going to have to overhaul the staff. And I think they're going to have to make some significant changes on the roster. I don't think that they can I don't think they can use the "we're too young" excuse. They're young in age, but they've got guys who have played a lot of games. And so, like, a guy like Peyton Krebs, who's got, what, less than 5 goals this year? It's either time for him to start producing or it's time to cut bait with a guy like that. Maybe you move on from another core guy to kind of send a message. But I think where the team is, if you bring back Don Granato, and even if you don't, I think, the Sabres very much, the fan base are going to be a let's wait and see. We'll believe it when we see it. If they win, they're all coming back. I mean,
of course.
And they're all going to come back and they'll get new ones. They'll get new fans too. But I think at this point, it's a wait and see. They were duped this year, and they're going to need to get some good faith in return. And that's going to be key this offseason. What they do is, it's not just impacting the future of winning games, but keeping your fan base happy. They're ready to riot.
Yeah, I mean, fans are upset, and I mean, I guess marketing or whatever you want to call it could play a role in all of this. But to your previous point about Matt, I mean, Matt Ellis was the director of player development for the Sabres. I have a ton of respect for him, and I don't. To me, he wasn't a guy that they just, you know, was around, so they hired him. I mean, he's had a relationship with Kevin Adams for a long time. And I mean, Matt Ellis is a lot of respect for him around the league, and I don't think it was that kind of hire. So,
I mean, a novel thing to do if they're gonna get rid of Granato is, you know, maybe like have an open search. Like the NHL just has all these retreads all the time. They're just recycled all the time. Why not try and find somebody new? Or, I mean, not specifically say we need somebody with experience or we need somebody new. Like, let's find the best candidate here. I know Michael Peca's name will come up if they try to make a move. Obviously, Lindy Ruff's name is going to come up if they make a move. They don't have to hire either of those guys, but if they're the best candidate available, they should get hired. Instead of just saying we need experience, or, you know, this guy has had, like, John Tortorella had a whole lot of success in the NHL. He's also been fired a whole lot of times.
Oh yeah, it's the nature of the beast, though.
Yeah, but at a certain point, when do you say, well, this guy keeps getting fired, why does he keep getting rehired? I mean,
because he's basically had success everywhere he's gone, maybe except for.
But he's also gotten fired, though.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's just the nature of the job,
I guess, okay, to an extent. But I mean, I don't know. Like, at a certain point, you got to say, well, okay, he's had success, but it's never lasted. Why don't we try to find somebody different? Somebody that's going to last. I mean, Detroit didn't want to pay Mike Babcock, and he walked. And obviously, it did not. It was a disaster in Toronto. But maybe Detroit is different if they keep Babcock in place. Maybe they don't fall off the face of the earth for a decade if they keep Babcock. I think you're right in an extent where they need to, whoever it is, whether it's Don Granato, whether it's somebody different, they need to figure out how to have a plan in place so that they're not making a move in a year. Because it's exhausting.
Well, I'll say this. It should be Don Granato. I mean, to me, he deserves to keep coaching the Sabres. So I'll leave it at that. But to the other part of that point, just other changes, I think they're going to have to bring in more veteran experience and more grit. I mean, to me, those are the key areas they're lacking. Just more sandpaper. More guys who have, I guess.
I think maybe clarify what you mean by grit. I don't think you're saying like they need to bring in an Adam Mayer or a Patrick Corrada. They need a guy who's not afraid to go in the dirty areas, a guy but can still produce for you. Like, he's not a third or fourth line guy. They need some toughness at the top too.
Right, and I mean they need some grit the bottom part of the lineup too. I mean, to me you can never have too much, but how that takes shape and who that would be, I mean, who knows? But I think getting some of those guys, I don't know, one or two or whatever, if that's a guy that fits in, you know, in the top nine, or if it's a guy that, you know, was more suited to that bottom six role, if it's a guy that, you know, can score 15 to 20 goals. I mean, guys like that they're not easy to get. Or if it's a guy that, you know, can score 8 goals and is, you know, a fourth liner. But I mean, I think those are areas they're going to, what's that?
The fourth line guys, though, I mean, are there any guys out there that are like that, that are going to give you anything Zemgus Girgensons isn't? I mean, to me, they need skill still. They need guys that can play in the top. I don't like the term top six, because I think if you're good, you should have three lines that can produce for you. I mean, you look out of the lockout, they had four lines that could produce. That's tough, but three lines should be the goal, I think, for any team that's a contender. But I mean, you know, one of the other things that's a frequent complaint about Don Granato, and I get it, is that it's crunch time late in games and he's rolling the fourth line out there. I think Jordan Greenway is a good player. I think he's a player that just about everybody would love to have. But not everybody would love to have him on their power play. Not everybody would love him in the game when you need a goal with 5 minutes left. He's not that kind of player. But that's how they use him. I think they need some. They need guys that can put the puck in the net. They need guys who can create some opportunities. And I think more than anything, they need professionals. They need guys who understand what it takes to be a pro hockey player 82 games a year.
Well, that's where just bringing in more veterans will help. Mm-hmm. I mean, like we talked about, they have a lot of young guys, and I think statistically they might still be the youngest team in the league, but a lot of those young guys have been around for whatever, 5, 6 years, 4 years. But for some of them, I mean, they've only experienced Buffalo. So guys to have someone else from another team that's, you know, played 40 playoff games in the last, you know, 6 years or whatever. I mean, to me, that's something they need badly.
To me, I look at them like the Penguins. I think we're 07. They had Crosby, Malkin, and Staal, and they were just babies. And I think they got swept in the first round. And then they come right back, and they're in the Cup Finals, and then they win. And part of that, obviously, is that, you know, Malkin and Crosby were just, they're all-time great players. But the Penguins also infused a whole bunch of veterans around them. I mean, Max Talbot, Miroslav Chatan, they had guys who'd been around the block. And I think that's what the Sabres are missing, you know, and I think that was overlooked, is that, you know, we've got all these really skilled young guys, but, you know, having guys who've done it before is still really, really important.
And they did get Eric Johnson, and that just, I mean, obviously it didn't work out. I think they thought Eric Johnson would play some of that role, and I'm sure he helped in some ways, but, I mean, it just, it wasn't, it just neither side really ultimately benefited much from it, and they traded him to the Flyers.
Yeah, but they still really didn't have it up front either. And you know, in those prime positions, those top three lines, top two lines. I mean, you look at them, and they're all of them are young guys, except I guess Jeff Skinner. And again, Jeff Skinner, who's had a very nice career, has never played in the playoffs.
Right, and I think Jeff Skinner's
crazy.
They're only forward over. Sorry, I think he's their only forward over 28, if I'm correct. So I mean, they just don't have guys. I mean, basically the whole roster is in their early to mid 20s, or you know, a few guys in their later 20s. So, I mean, in the modern NHL, there just aren't a ton of 30-year-olds, and or aren't a ton of guys who are well into their 30s. And
I don't know if they need those guys either. I mean, maybe a guy who's 28 or something like that.
But yeah, I mean, definitely more experience.
I mean, we look at Zemgus Girgensons as a geezer sometimes, but he's what, 30? He's
yes,
just been around for so long.
Yes, I'm sorry. Jeff Skinner and Zemgus Girgensons are their only forwards. I think players who are 30, right? So
yeah, I think if you put a gun to somebody's head and said, "How old is Zemgus Girgensons?" A lot of people would say like 35, because he's just been around for so long.
He has been. So,
but you know, you spoke to Rasmus Dahlin. He expressed belief in the Sabres in the future, and you know, obviously, he's not going to come out and say, "No, they suck. I want to be traded." But you feel that there was some genuineness from him.
I do feel that there was a lot of genuine belief in the group, and I'll read you some of his quotes. I want the Buffalo Sabres in the playoffs, and I'm never going to give up, and I think we're close. I think we are a really good team. I think we're the youngest team in the league so well. It sucked that we didn't get in, but we have learned so many things from this year that we have to bring into next year and get better. Then another quote, you see the games. It's not like we get blown out every game. we're in every game. It's a close game pretty much every game, and we just haven't found that the consistent in the day-to-day stuff. We're really, really good at times, and at times not really, really good. And special teams and stuff like that, we got to find a lot of things. So, I mean, he knows that they're – he understands that they're flawed and everything else, and in many ways they still have a long ways to go. But on the other hand, they've done a lot of things that they should – should like that they've progressed in and so forth. So I think it's like you said, I think it's a genuine belief. I think he knows how good they can be. And I mean, I don't, you know, it's, I guess it's a quote you would expect from a guy who will likely be your next captain. But at the same time, he acknowledges that they, you know, like we just haven't found the consistent and the day-to-day stuff. I mean, that goes to some of your points, just how the consistency of day in, day out habits and, you know, game, whatever, 22 is just as important as game 80, you know, game 72, 82. So I think that speaks to a lot of what we've discussed.
So I think one thing too, that I've really thought about over the last couple of weeks. I think a month ago, if you said, you know, the Sabres are going to get rid of some of these core guys, I think Alex Tuch usually came to mind as a guy they could get rid of. You're not going to get rid of Tage Thompson, obviously. You're not getting rid of Rasmus Dahlin. You're not getting rid of Owen Power. I don't think you can get rid of Dylan Cousins at this point. And you can't get rid of Jeff Skinner because of his contract. But when you look at Tuch, there's a guy who came to play just about every night. That's a guy who was a stand-up guy in the locker room, whether it's with the guys or with the media. How do you get rid of that guy?
Oh, you can't.
When you need guys like that, you can't get rid of guys like that.
That's
the guy they need. That they need more of that guy.
Yeah, and I mean, there's zero chance Alex Tuch goes anywhere. I mean, Kevin Adams has said that he won't trade him. Teams are calling about him. And yeah, I mean, Alex Tuch is everything you've said. I mean, he's been a stand-up guy in the locker room. He owns it. He gets up after games and acknowledges that he wasn't good enough or whatever. I mean, he was talking the other day in Dallas. I wasn't there, but he was talking about how his start just, you know, wasn't good enough, and I think he embodies everything, you know, that they want in that locker room. And there's zero chance. I mean, they like you said, they could use more of him. And I mean, he's as we've seen these last, I don't know, few weeks, month, second half of the season, whatever. I mean, he's a very talented player, and I think beginning of the year he didn't have the start he wanted. He might have been playing hurt. He got injured. I think it just kind of snowballed, and he got behind it. And once he started producing, I mean, he produced at the level we expected. And I mean, the standard he set last year was whatever, 30 some goals, high 30s, and a point a game. And ultimately, he's not going to finish around that this year. But I mean, if he got back to that 35 goal, 75 point type guy next year, it wouldn't surprise me at all, because he's played at that level for the past month or so at crunch time.
I mean, forget the Tyson Jost, the Zemgus Girgensen type guys. That when I think of grit, that's the guy I think of. Is, I mean, Tuch isn't the most skilled guy. He's not the grittiest guy, but when you put the entire package together, it's pretty good. And they need more of him.
Oh, he's so aggressive, and I do think he has a ton of talent. But he's what makes him such
he's not Tage Thompson, right? He's not Rasmus Dahlin from a talent standpoint. He's
right.
He's good. He's got talent, but it's not like this. He's never going to be your franchise guy.
Well, I mean, he's
the kind of guy you need to build your franchise on. You build around a guy like Dahlin, you build around a guy like Thompson, you build on a guy like Tuch.
There's some guys that they're when you put the, like you say, they're not the flashiest guys, but they're a well above average kind of in every category. And when you put the package together, there's something special. And one thing about Alex Tuck too is, I mean, he's gotten a lot of attention for this year. Just his aggressiveness, the way he hunts pucks and can strip pucks. And I mean, he's truly one of the league's elite players at doing that. That's another thing that just adds to what can make him such an effective player, a top tier scorer. It's just the way he can back check and get after guys and lift their stick and get the puck back. It's a very unique skill, and he's been very, very good at it.
So I just think it's going to be interesting to see who they view as expendable. When you say they can't, you know, you're going to hold on to Thompson, you're going to hold on to Tuck, you're going to hold on to Dahlin, you're going to hold on to Power, you're going to hold on to Cousins. Who's left after that?
And that's a good question. I mean,
you're looking at maybe, you know, moving on from Jack Quinn or J.J. Paterka in hopes of getting a haul.
I highly doubt that. And I mean,
but if you don't,
ultimately,
I mean,
we don't know.
If you don't, where else are they going to go? Like, right. I mean, you can't just say we're gonna trade J.J. Paterka, trade Jack Quinn for a guy, right? Like, you have to get a haul. Maybe they need a haul. But
I don't see
that's
happening.
That's the interesting thing is, you can only say so many guys are expendable.
That's true. But I don't think it's going to be them. Those were Kevin Am's first two draft picks. I mean, J.J. Paterka has taken huge steps this year.
Quinn is the interesting one, right? He's the interesting one. He's had some injuries. He's shown some flashes. I don't know. One of those guys, I don't know. I think they, you can't hold on to everybody.
That's true. But
it's going to be fascinating to see who they view as indispensable and who they view as trade fodder.
That's true. But not Jack and JJ.
Give me a name then, Bo.
What's that?
Give me a name then.
I don't want to speculate. I have no idea.
That's what we're doing. We're speculating.
I have no idea. I mean, but yeah, I mean, there's guys that they're going to have to part with at some point. And there's prospects. I mean, we've talked about all these prospects, and some of these prospects we've talked about probably will never play for the Sabres or will only have played a handful of games for the Sabres. I mean,
some of the guys that you're questioning, we'll bring this guy up or bring that guy up, like Rusek. I'm going to guess that they don't view him on the same level as Kulik or Rosen. But again, is there still a place for Kulik or Rosen in this organization if you're not considering getting rid of Paterka or Quinn?
I mean, they've built up enough young talent and depth in that area that, yeah, at a certain time, if these guys pan out, they're going to have to make some difficult decisions because they could have a good problem and have too much of up front. So that's,
I mean, they're kind of the same guy too, right? I mean, and they're going to be the most appealing to people because you don't know what they are. You think you know what they're going to be, but you don't know.
Yeah, we don't know yet. And I think those guys,
they have to move one of them before the jury's out, right? Like, or maybe two. They have to move some of these young guys before the jury's out for, you know, to maximize their value. It's just a matter of who.
It could happen, but I will say that one thing with Yuri Kulik and Isaac Rosén is that they've become very good AHL players. I mean, Kulik has shown he can be a top-level scorer at times, but there's a good chance that they could start next year in Rochester, and that would be their third year in Rochester. And you know what? That's not a bad thing to me. Somewhere along the line.
It is, though, if you're getting to it, then you're getting to a point where are they ever going to come up? And the longer they're down there, I think the less value they're going to have from somebody else.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, that could be a perspective of some, but I mean, somewhere along the line, things got out of hand, and you know, if a prospect spends, you know, 2 years or whatever, or 3 years in the AHL, like they're not a good prospect, and this and that. I don't think that's true. I mean, they were playing in the AHL as teenagers last year. In Kulik's case, basically the whole year. So, I mean, playing against men, having success as teenagers in the AHL, and it's going to take time. I mean, we've seen Jiří Kulik. I mean, he's evolved this year. He was league leading goal scorer, or one of, excuse me, one of them for whatever 2+ months, and then he kind of hit a wall, and he started scoring again. So, I mean, it takes time, and I don't think if those guys are back with the Amerks next year, I don't think it's an indictment on their development or whatever. It takes time. I mean, we saw with Jason Pominville was on the Amerks for more than 3 years. He cleared waivers. Derek Roy was on the Amerks, I guess, well over 2 years. So, or three parts of 3 seasons. So, for some of these guys, I mean, there's no need to rush them and don't.
All right, Bill.
All right, did you enjoy this one?
I did. We covered a lot of ground.
We certainly did. So, all right. Well, hopefully everyone can hear this episode. I apologize. Apparently my voice was very you couldn't hear me last week. It was very hard to hear me, so I apologize for the technical difficulties. But you can email us at buffalopressbox@gmail.com. You can leave us a review, tell a friend. Nick, it's been fun. We'll do it again next week. And thank you for joining us.